In the early days of the movement, there were not many sannyasis, so there were only like, 1970, I think there were only like 4 or 5 sannyasis. Maybe 6 at the most. So it was kind of a rare breed. So it was very special if the sannyasi had come to your temple. So every time the sannyasi would go anywhere, everybody would pay obeisances. So if he'd walk down the street, and everybody would just stop and pay obeisances. And it was awkward for the sannyasi, so they asked Prabhupada what to do, and then Prabhupada said, well, once in the morning, we'll pay obeisances, which we do now. That's where it came from. And once in the morning, we would pay obeisances, and then you'd be good for the rest of the day. But then if you didn't pay obeisances to every sannyasi you saw, every time you saw them, it would be all right. And then Prabhupada said that when you pay obeisances in the morning, after you pay obeisances, and somehow nobody knows this, you should say, my dear Vaishnava devotees, please forgive me for any offenses I have made, because you may have made offenses and you don't know it. And even if you hadn't made offenses, it's just secure position. So after we offer our pranams to the Vaishnavas, after we say that, you should say, my dear Vaishnavas, please forgive me for any offenses I may have made, knowingly or unknowingly. Because you don't want offenses lingering on. Ordinarily, if you don't pay obeisances to a sannyasi, you have to fast. Some devotees will say, that's the only reason I pay obeisances to sannyasis, because I don't want to fast today. Other than that, I don't, you know, too much trouble bowing down. I have a bad back, and I'm getting old. So that's the story on paying obeisances. So they're getting mixed up between the parikrama and last week's class. But that's okay. So anyone else want to share what they've learned? Yes, and how you applied it?
Last night, I had something happened, and I responded in a problem-based manner.
A what-based?
Problem-based.
Problem-based?
Oh.
Oh, you focused on the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It works?
You know, I've already committed an offense, so I felt really bad the whole night.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So,
all right, yeah. So what she's saying is we were discussing that what a lot of us do when something bad happens or there's a problem is we focus on the problem. And we get very, what's the word? When you get worse than absorbed. Fixated or worse than fixated.
Obsessed.
Who said that? Yeah. That's the word. That's the perfect word. We get obsessed with a problem or we get obsessed with something negative. By obsessed, I mean we can't stop thinking about it. It could be something we did, or it could be something somebody else did. And the obsession causes a drain of energy, it causes us to become upset, and it causes us to become discouraged. And the more you're obsessed, the more discouraged and upset and negative you're going to be. Yes? You agree? So we were talking last week about when you are in a negative situation, or you've done something negative, or someone else has done something you don't like, you look at it, you recognize it, you acknowledge it, and then you shift into a positive mode, either a solution, how are we going to deal with this, what can we do in this situation, or because you can't do anything in some situations, you stop thinking about it, and that's your solution, is that I can do nothing. My solution is not to think about it, because the longer I think about it, the more upset I become and the more negative I become. And then I think I might have given you a money-back guarantee that if you think about something that you don't like and you think about it long enough, I give you 100% money-back guarantee you'll become discouraged. And if you don't believe me, try it. and you can report to me next week. Think about something that really bothers you and keep thinking about it. And gradually you'll become very discouraged by it. This Prabhu is doing this and he's a senior devotee and it bothers me. And the more you think about it, the more it bothers you. Now, there was one wise person who said something which I realized early on in my career as a devotee. When somebody is doing something that is upsetting, what you should say to yourself is, thank you for showing me what I don't want to do. Thank you for teaching me something that I don't want to imitate. That sounds a little sarcastic, but in reality, if somebody's doing something that you don't believe is right, or you don't approve of, or you feel is harmful, or it's not Krishna conscious, you can look at it from the perspective of they're showing me what I shouldn't do. A very interesting thing happened in Prabhupada's time with one devotee who was complaining. Actually, it was Bhakti Tirthamaraj. He was complaining. He said, there's prejudice in our movement. Because as a black devotee, he felt the prejudice. And Prabhupada basically told him, by you complaining about the prejudice, then you're the same. In other words, you're complaining about people complaining about you. So now how does that make you any different? So it's like a catch-22. So this Prabhu has done something wrong, and now I'm meditating on the wrong thing he's done. So oftentimes my meditation on his activity is actually worse than what he's done, right? Or let's say now I'm going around and telling all of you what he's done. And that ends up disturbing you, so I end up creating more harm than him. And it harms me more. So if you develop the mindset or the understanding that if there's a problem, immediately you analyze it and then you focus on solutions. What can we do? Then you've shifted the problem into something positive. And if you don't do that, you're just going to focus on the negative. And you're going to get upset, you're going to get discouraged, and possibly you'll commit offense if that problem is dealing with the behavior of someone. Another thing I think we learned, or if we didn't, I'll explain it. There are different personality indexes you can find. One is called the Enneagram. It's very popular. A lot of devotees have studied that. But there are other personality indexes which describe different kinds of people according to different kinds of natures. And if you look at any of these personality indexes, you realize you fall in one of those categories, and your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your friends, they all fall in very distinct categories. And you see how this behavior in that friend or mother, father, or whatever is repetitive. It keeps, they're always like that. They're always, some people are always worried, right? And if there's nothing to worry about, that worries them. It's true. You know people like that? It's like they're from New York City and they go out in the country and then they're a little bit anxious because like it's too quiet. It's like there's nothing going on. You know, like they need something to go on, something to go wrong. But so some people have that nature. Some people are the opposite. They don't worry about anything. You know, they'll walk on the edge of a building 20 stories up and yeah, whatever. You could fall, yeah, whatever. If I fall, I fall. So everybody has a certain nature. And then when you understand that, it's easier to be accepting of people's nature. That's just how they are. Like we have two German ladies here. The thing about Germans is they're very German. Have you noticed? Three Germans.
Five.
So you want something done, you know, really well, precision, well built, organized. Get a German, and it's like, ja, good. Right? That's the way they are. Aside from having their own individual personality. Right? And then as Indians or Americans, Australians, whatever we are, we have a nature. When you understand that, it's easier to accept people's behavior, which you don't approve of. And then we gave a little advice. If you don't like something, either a thing or a person's action or a situation, someone's words, behavior, you just say, here's your mantra. That's, what's the mantra? Anyone remember? That's interesting. That's interesting. Actually, I just read a piece on, that's interesting. Oh, they're building this really ugly building right in the middle of the road. And you're thinking, I know what you're thinking. Especially if you're German, I know what you're thinking. But you should think, you know, in Europe, in certain countries, everything is really organized. And if one blade of grass is out of place in your lawn, you'll get a citation, right? You have to pay a fine, isn't it? So, you know, you come to India, obviously it's different. I just read a piece, but it was very nice, and the person was saying something similar. And he's saying sometimes people will say or do things which just don't make any sense. And it's helpful. It's helpful if you think, that's an interesting way to look at things. I've never thought of it like that before. Right? That's it. I've never, instead of saying, how could anybody be so stupid as to think that way, right? You think, that's a really interesting way to look at things. I had never thought of that before. Yeah. When you're in the taxi, that's a really interesting way to drive. I've never driven like that before. I feel like I'm in an amusement park in a toy car. This is exciting. This is interesting, exciting, adventurous. So the whole point is, if you don't pull your mind off focusing on the negative, then the negative is going to expand. And you're going to start getting discouraged. Possibly you're going to start committing offenses, or you're going to get highly critical. All these things are very bad for you materially, emotionally, spiritually, in all ways. I read an article today. I'm doing an online course on, we're just preparing an online course on forgiveness. And if you turn that on, it's gonna.
Is it here?
No, because it's
sound.
The recording is. This is a class in tolerance. So we purposely made it warm in here so you could tolerate it. If you put the fans on back there, if they don't make noise, it's fine, but if you can tolerate, it's better. The windows are all open?
Mosquitoes are there.
So we have screens. Just pretend it's May and we're all saying, it's so cool today. If this were May, it would not be this cool at 4 in the morning.
The atmosphere in this room is interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. The sweat on my forehead is even more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. So, most of us have a tendency to be negative, to look at the bad, to be critical, to be judgmental, for whatever reason. But it's very detrimental to our spiritual life. It drains energy. So there's a saying, whatever you're against will drain your energy, and whatever you're for will give you energy. So if you think about it, you realize that everything you're against is just disturbing you. And it's also interesting that a lot of us are very negative, and then we say, well, I want to go to this class to get inspired. But you actually can't get inspired because you default back to negative. Right? So the inspiration, it can't really last. Does that make sense? And the more you're looking for inspiration, Not that it's bad, but you have to ask yourself, is there something negative in me that's causing me to always be seeking inspiration? Because the reality is, the greatest inspiration comes from within. When you are connected to something that inspires you, you're very motivated to do it, and you don't need anyone to motivate you. And you're very positive. And when you focus on that, you get energy. Yes? And you can work very, very hard, and time flies. Yes? And when you're focused on the negative, it drains energy, and then you come to this point where you start complaining. Say, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. And then you're in this default negative position and you're trying to get inspired. I need to get this association to get inspired. But you always defaulted to negative. And the person who can inspire you most is you. Yes, you agree? Disagree? Think about it, yeah. So it's very important to not be focused on what you don't like and find things that inspire you. Because then you'll be inspired and you'll be happy even when things around you are not going so well. Like, you might be in a temple, things aren't going so well, but you're very inspired about your particular area of service. And even though others may be discouraged by what's happening, you remain inspired. Of course, some of you might be thinking, but I don't know what inspires me. That's another topic. But at least understand the principle. If you find what inspires you, you're going to tend to be more positive. And then, in the last class, we were also mentioning one of the reasons that we're critical, I believe personally, is that our society has brainwashed into making us think we're not good enough. That it sets such high standards of success that most people don't reach them. And therefore, average people feel they're lacking, because they're not highly placed, or they're not wealthy, or they don't have big muscles or beautiful bodies. They don't look like they're 25 when they're 50 and they become depressed. Isn't it? So, if we learn to be more satisfied with who we are, I may not be the greatest, I may not be the most beautiful or intelligent, but Krishna has given me some abilities, and if I use them and I'm inspired by them to do service, I will find that I become more satisfied. And to the degree I become more satisfied, I will find my tendency to be negative and critical diminishes. So really, that tendency to be negative and critical is rooted in dissatisfaction and feeling that I'm not good enough, that there's something wrong with me. And you wouldn't believe how many people feel that way. But it's easy to understand why we feel that way. Because we're getting that propaganda from the time we're very young. Why aren't you as good as Priya next door? Why aren't you as good as your sister? Why didn't you make it into this university? Right? You've heard that? Any, raise your hand if you've heard that before. All the Indians raised their hand. All the Indians raised four arms, right? But not only Indians, many of us have heard that, and we're still hearing that, right? And so, somebody is very successful, they're very wealthy, and we think, okay, that's success, and I'm not on that level, so I'm unhappy. And then we become envious, we become jealous, and all these things degrade us. So what I was saying was, I read an article, and it said that if you have a tendency to be easily angered, and you get angry often, that will affect your heart in the same way that smoking affects your heart. You'll have high blood pressure, and you will likely have heart trouble because of anger. And there was an article about resentment, and one psychologist said, resentment is basically a toxin on your body that's slowly, slowly killing you. And some people say resentment is just slow suicide. It's killing you emotionally and spiritually, and not only that, it's killing you physically. So Negativity is bad because it's bad physically. It takes away our energy. It causes us to be offensive. It can discourage us. So, my recommendation or my realization is that if all of us become a little more satisfied with who we are and who Krishna created us to be, if we utilize the abilities that Krishna gave us, even if we don't become great, just utilize them. Like, look at Mother Teresa. Do you think her goal in life was to be some big famous personality? No way. She was just trying to help people. And she said, if you can't do great things, who knows that saying?
Yeah. We can't all do great things, but we can all do like a great amount of good things or something like that.
I thought it was something like
a lot of small things.
You can't do great things, but then do little things with a lot of love, something like that. With great love, do little things with great, something like that. Anyway, so that was her philosophy. So she found her calling, and she just wanted to help people. It wasn't that she wanted to be known around the world. And that was her seva, that was her service, that's what her calling is. And if we all go, we all understand our nature and more go deeply into ourselves, we'll start to find things that we'll feel are more of our calling. And if we do it, we'll be satisfied. We do the best we can, we don't have to outdo anybody else, and then we're satisfied. And then we'll see, as that satisfaction increases, our tendency to be negative will reduce. And so negativity has at its core this personal dissatisfaction that I'm not good enough, and so forth. Yes?
Yeah, you reminded me of something else that you said.
Yes.
Because often when we judge other people, you said that when we appreciate when someone else is achieving something good and understand that someone else can do something good and we can be doing something good elsewhere. I mean, I got it and then I lost it.
Yeah, well, what I was saying is that if someone else is doing something that you'd like to do, or doing it better than you, and then you become envious, that envy is very negative. And so it minimizes your chances or abilities of achieving something similar, because you've created all this negativity around that activity or characteristic that you want. So you can't be negative about something and achieve it. So let's say I'm writing a book, and you're writing a book, and you're a better writer than I am, and you become more successful. And then I'm thinking, well, that's not fair, or I'm actually as good as her, or I'm actually better. I don't want to admit you're better. And I think, well, I'm better, but she's becoming more well-known. So now I'm envious of you. I'm envious of the success you had as a writer, but I want to become successful as a writer. And it doesn't help me to be envious of you, because that's a negative. So then I create negativity around becoming a successful writer by being envious of you. And if I appreciate what you do, then I create positivity about becoming successful. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we don't realize we're doing this. Like, every time you become envious of someone, you create a negativity about that which you're envious of. Right? So I think I was giving the example. Somebody wants a lot of money but says, I hate rich people. If you hate rich people, why would you want to become rich? It's a paradox. Okay, I don't want to become rich, I want to be poor, and I hate rich people. That's totally in alignment. But if you want to be rich and you hate rich people, if you want to be successful as a writer but you hate successful writers, you're out of alignment. If you want to develop saintly qualities, but you're envious of another devotee who's saintly because they have more followers or they have more facility than you, then how are you going to develop that quality? Because now you're putting a negative towards it, even though in your mind you think it's a positive. So you're actually out of alignment with what you want to achieve. Does that make sense? So I was, on the first day, I think of the first class, I was making the point that a lot of us want to achieve something externally, and we work externally, but internally we're out of alignment. See, I want to be wealthy, but I hate rich people. I want to be humble, but somebody else over there is more humble than me, and that's not good, because I want to get the first prize for being the most humble. And everybody likes that person because they're more humble than I am. And I don't like that person because they're more humble than I am. So now I don't like humility. So now I have a negative about humility. And I'm trying to become humble, so I'm out of alignment with what I'm trying to get. And I don't even realize it. Right? Have any of you done that before? Okay, don't lie. Raise your hand. We do it all the time. We have fears about achieving something. We have fears of failure. We have fears of succeeding. We have fears of taking responsibility. So many things are going on within us. And externally, we're trying to achieve something. So if you're working hard to achieve something and you're not, generally, it could mean a few things. One, it's really not your nature. You're trying to be American Idol and you can't sing on key. You know, better don't try. But if you're a really good singer and you can't achieve it, it's probably something inside that's preventing it. Some fear that, you know, what if I become famous? You know, maybe people won't love me if I'm famous. There's another thing that's quite interesting, is that all of us want to have good relationships, but what a lot of people do is they pretend to be somebody they're not because they think people will like them. But people don't like people who pretend. So then they're wondering, why don't I have good relationships? So externally they're thinking, I want them. But internally they're acting in a way that doesn't enable good relationships because they're being pretentious. They're not being honest and straightforward. But they think people will like them if they have a certain profile. But people see through the profile. So then they're working against themselves. So if you think about this long enough, you can start to notice ways you might be working against yourself, especially in areas where you're working hard to achieve something and you're not getting it. You're always falling short. I'll give you some crazy example. You want to hear a crazy example?
Yes.
This shows how crazy we can be in some cases. If, for example, you have a bad experience in a relationship, particularly a bad experience in a relationship with the opposite sex, and it was so distasteful that it caused you to be fearful about relationships. What often happens is, when you have a close relationship with the opposite sex in the future, when it starts to get good, you'll make it go bad. Because your experience in the past was everything was good, and it got close like this, and it went bad. So now, subconsciously, you'll make it go bad in the future, even when it's good. And then you'll blame it on the other person. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever done that? Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? Yes.
Can you please repeat again about the files that you sent?
Oh, the files, yeah, okay. So, last week we talked about files. We have files of the past. Okay, so let's say I gave you three filing cabinets. And they're labeled past, present, and future. So I would say, put all your files in the past, in the past file box. Put what's going on in the present, like now in your life. What are you working on now? What's going on in your family, in your relationships, in your service, where you're living, what are you doing? Put that here. Like right now our file is we're in Mayapur, we're doing courses, or we're doing this seva. And then put the files of the future in your future box, right? So what are you supposed to put in the past? Well, everything from 1 second ago or yesterday or last week, you put in the past file. The present, what you're working on now, and the future is what you want to work on or what you want to create, what you want to achieve. The future will be your goals. You know, what it is. And the goals can be physical goals. I want to do this service. I want to achieve these results. And they can be personal goals about qualities I'd like to develop, characteristics, ways of what we call ways of being. I'd like to be more kind, or I'd like to have better relationships, or I'd like to be more understanding. I'd like to be able to listen better. So that those are the things we would put in the future. Things we want to create that we haven't yet created. Things we want to be that we haven't yet become. How many people do you think actually do that with the future? Because the future is being created, because kind of the future means you're creating it out of nothing. It's just what you want to be in the future, and it's not based on the past. What most people do is take the files from the past, this is how life has been in the past, and they take them and they put them in the future file box. And so their future is a carbon copy of their past. Well, in the past I was only able to do this and this and that, so my future goals are the same as the past. I failed at this, failed at that, so I put that in the future. I'm probably going to fail at this and fail at that. Rather than saying, I failed at this and that, that was in the past, but I want to go forward into the future, and I want to create something better, right? Most of us don't do that. We create the future from the past, rather than create the future from the future. So why do we do that? Because we base our future on our experience in the past, right? For example, I had one godbrother. He took sannyasa at a very early age. I said, why? He said, because when I grew up, my parents constantly fought. And as a kid, I made a vow I would never get married. After seeing that, I thought, this marriage was so horrible, I decided I would never get married. Isn't that interesting? So that's a file from the past, which he refiled in the future. And you might say, well, hey, that was a good file. It was for a while, but he got married. So if he wasn't reacting to the past, he probably would have realized, no, actually, I want to get married, and I want to have a good relationship, and I have to create a new file for the future, which is not based on the file from the past. But most of us take the files from the past and then repeat them into the future. Well, I wasn't very good in school, so what are your goals? Well, my goals are to be this or that. Well, you could have, and those goals being based on your academic career, but you could decide that, well, I could study other subjects for which I'm more inclined. I could go to different schools, I can go to workshops. I can learn certain things that I wasn't so good at because I would like to do these things, and those are new files that create a future which is different than the past. Does that make sense? What most people do, and a lot of devotees do from time to time, some more often than others, is live life more in reaction to the past and in reaction to what's going on in the environment than deliberately creating what they want for the future. Right? So like when you say, well, I'd really like to be like this, but I could never be like this. I've never been that way. That's creating the future from the past. Creating the future from the future would be saying, I'd really like to be this way, and I'm going to work on it. And I'm going to associate with this devotee because they're like that. And I'm going to read stories about devotees that are like this. And I'm going to do a little work on myself to see how I can change some things about myself so I can be more like this. So now you want to be different from how you were in the past. Now you're creating the future from the future. But whenever you say, I can never be this way, you're creating the future from the past, so it recycles. Then you don't change. So we're driving our car and we're looking in the rearview mirror behind us. And that's how we're going forward, by looking at the past. I evaluate my past, and that's how I decide what I can do in the future. Does that make sense? So you have two things. You have reaction, and then you have deliberate thinking. Reaction is just kind of getting pushed around by circumstances. And deliberate thinking is this is where I want to go. Right? So reactive thinking would be kind of like sailing a boat without a rudder and the wind is just pushing it and you're just going with the wind. And deliberate thinking would be steering it, using the wind to steer it. Right? So then I also mentioned an important point is that a lot of us don't believe we can do that. And that's where we get stuck. You say, well, I don't believe I can do that. To which I would say, you are absolutely right. You can't do it. Because you believe you can't. But as soon as you believe you can, you will see things change. Because your beliefs are like your rudder directing your future. And beliefs are very powerful. And we'll talk more about beliefs later. But they're amazingly powerful. But the point is, every moment in our lives we're making decisions. Should I do this or should I do that? But most of the decisions are based on the past. So I evaluate what decision I think I can make based on my past history. This was how I did in school. This was what my family was like, what my country was like. This is what I've done so far. Therefore, this is all I'm able to do. And I was mentioning also the point that when we joined this movement, Prabhupada broke down all those paradigms. We may have been thinking like that, but he said, here's the mission. And so we're down here, and the mission was up here. So it's like, okay, you know, if it's up to me, I stay down here, because this is what I think I can handle. And Prabhupada's saying, it's up here. So now you have to figure out how you're going to do it up here. So we just said, Jai Prabhupada, and kind of broke all our past conceptions. And said, well, if Prabhupada wants us to do it, then I guess we're going to do it. So we were living examples. There was one of my godbrothers who was giving a lecture many years ago, and he said, you know, when I look back to my early days in ISKCON, when Prabhupada was on the planet, and I look back to see what I did, I can't actually understand how I was able to do that. Because I was thinking in such a big way, I was endeavoring in such a big way, and I had far less experience and maturity than I have now. I can't understand how I was so bold, how I was so fearless, how I had such big ideas, and the energy, and maybe the stupidity, to do them. So Prabhupada kind of broke open those restrictions and limits on us. Okay, it's time for a funny story. You like funny stories? I don't know if it's that funny, but it's funny. For me, it's funny. Anyway. So, you all know what a bumblebee is? Bumblebee is like a helicopter, right? More or less, isn't it? Don't they go up and down, bumblebees? They fly like this? So they fly like helicopters, right? You know, they look like what, big cockroaches? Kind of round cockroaches? Is it? No? That's an offense to the bumblebee? They look like a bee that was an offspring of mating between a cockroach and a bee. Is that better? No? Still offensive, all right. What do they look like? Overweight bees, and they're round. Yeah, okay, bumblebees, overweight bees. So they've studied the bumblebee, and they found that according to the laws of aerodynamics, a bumblebee should not be able to fly, because a bumblebee defies the laws of aerodynamics. He should not be able to fly. So you want to hear the joke? Of course, you know bumblebees fly, right? So the joke is, it's a good thing nobody told the bumblebee. Because he'd be up there, and if you told him, you'd immediately crash, right? Yeah. You would immediately crash. So they also say that young people, you know, teenagers and people in their early 20s, they're extremely ambitious. And they think about doing things and try to do things that no mature adult, that every mature adult is smart enough to know you shouldn't do. And about half those teenagers and young people succeed because they're not smart enough to know that you can't, that you're going to fail if you try. But as you get older, you get smart enough to know that you're going to fail if you try to do this, so you just stop doing it. Can you relate to that? So Prabhupada took all us young people and said, okay, we're going to move the bar up here, and we all said, cool, let's go for it. And we burst out of our limitations. So we created a future that was not in any way encumbered by files from the past. It was completely new files. Right? And I also mentioned, when you become a devotee, for most of us, especially Westerners, they're all new files. Right? Now I'm going to get up at 4 o'clock. What time are you getting up in the morning before you became a devotee? You remember?
Eight, 10, 11.
Yeah, right? So now we're getting up at 4. That kind of defies our past history. Actually, I was worse. Because before I became a devotee, I was a student, and I was going to bed around the time that I was now waking up as a devotee. Yeah, so that really defied the past by about 11 hours or 12 hours. It defied the past by 12 hours. So we were defying the past in becoming devotees. So it does show that we can do it. Does that make sense? Is that clear? You want more? Adi Devi, you want more?
I just wanted to share that for everyone.
Oh, okay. So the point is, you create the future from the future. You don't create it from the past. And it's... when you start saying things like, I could never be that way, you're creating the future from the past. Because now you're basing it on what you were in the past, and you're saying, I can never be that way. My point is, if you want to be that way, that will inspire you. If you really want it, then go for it. And if you don't get it, you won't be discouraged if you really want it, because if you really want it, you'll keep getting up and you'll go for it. That's the way it works. So don't be discouraged about something you really want just because you haven't been able to do it yet. Yes?
So how do you learn from your past?
How do you learn from your past? You, oh yeah, you just, it's a great question, and the question to ask yourself is, no matter what happened in the past, what can I learn from it? Just like, in a few days I'm going away to Mauritius, so they asked me to give some workshops on Grihastha life. So would you like to know how I've become an expert on Grihastha life, that I could give seminars? Because I made every possible mistake in household life you could make. So I can tell people what not to do, because I've done it all. So that's one of the ways you become an expert. And like, so you're sitting there thinking, God, Mahatma, he knows so much about so many things. I go, yeah, because I made all the mistakes. That's why I know. I've already, you know, already went off on this road, and now I can tell you, don't go on that road, because you're going to get lost. So,
isn't that created a past, a future path and a past path?
Because it's not a reaction to the past. You're still creating a future that you want, but you can use the past to create a future that you want, rather than repeating the past. You know, you go from one marriage failure to another. That's creating the future from the past. You go from one failed marriage to a good marriage, that's creating the future by learning from the past. It's not a reaction, it's deliberate. I want to have a good relationship, let me learn from this. So it's all about the future, what you want to achieve, as opposed to the future just being what it is, because that's what you settle for rather than you want. Just like if you look at your life, then I ask you the question, are you settling for what you have, or is this what you want? Right? And you don't have to settle for what you have. You can create what you want. But so many of us don't believe we can do that. So we settle for what is rather than create what we want. Because we say, well, it's never happened. To which I say, not yet. But if you want to make it happen, then yes, why not? You had a...
Could we say that the difference is in that we either look at the past consciously and assess from it, or it created the pattern which we don't know we have, and then we just play it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's hard to recognize sometimes those patterns, because they are our patterns.
We
have to recognize it ourselves, and it's not.
That's why you have to get married, so your wife will tell you what's wrong with you. So you have your blind spots, but she doesn't. Or if you don't want to get married, then you have to be extremely transparent with yourself, or have friends that are willing to be honest with you. Part of it is false ego, because the false ego doesn't want to admit we're failures. It doesn't want to admit we're not great. But once we're more accepting of who we are, then we can look at what's wrong, and then we can repair it. And you know, nobody's perfect. But a lot of us think there's something wrong with us if we're not perfect. And we become depressed because we're not perfect. Now, that's not healthy. There may be reasons for that, but whatever the reasons are, they're not healthy. Yes?
Sometimes we might have a plan or a design of what we want to do in the future, and we make goals and we make plans and achieve that. But then we run into let's say we're on our motorbike, right, and we're going to drive from here to Calcutta, and we've got a good bike, and they're full of gas and oil, and we got the plan and we got the goal. But what we didn't see was that bus that was, there's two buses that were going to be racing each other, and one of them was going to knock us off the road. So how do you, you have your goals and you have your plans and how they're going to come up, but then something comes out of...
Right. So how do you deal with it?
Change the whole thing around.
How do you deal with it? Well, generally, what you find is if you're passionate about something, like this goal is really important for you, even if you got in an accident, somehow or other you'd come out of it and you'd keep going. And that's how you know if this goal is really right for you. But if you run into a situation like that and you just say, what's the use, you know? Then you know it's probably not a goal that's really inspiring to you, because you've given up so easily. Unless it's just your nature to give up on anything. That's another thing. But there has to be goals that are right for you, that are just like, this is it. This is what I really want to do. I've always dreamed of doing this, and I'm so inspired to do this. And just like today, I set up a studio, and got the lighting in and everything. I'm starting to do this online course, and then all of a sudden the electricity goes and the lights start flashing, in the middle of the video. I'm like, oh great. And then the lights just go out and come back on and go out. And then we try window lighting. And the window lighting makes my face look purple. And so then we go outside, and then somebody's shooting firecrackers. And it's like no, but I have to get this done. I didn't punch any walls. I didn't scream. I didn't beat anybody up. Felt like it, but if you don't really want to get it done, then when that happens, you go, I guess Krishna just doesn't want it to happen. My personal experience in life is when things like that happen, that's usually a sign that it's going to be really good. Like this course is going to be really good, because there's a lot of obstacles right now. I've had experiences like that. I have a friend, he's a devotee, and he's a very famous musician, and he said anytime he'd come up with a new album and the experts were divided, some really liked it and some didn't, he knew that was going to be a good album. And in fact, the first album he made, which made him famous, he presented it to some famous musician, and the musician said, this album, no one's going to like this. He wrote a song. The song that made him famous was a song about a mountain in Venezuela. And this famous musician said, nobody's going to like a song about a mountain in Venezuela. But anyway, he's very persistent, and that's what made him famous. So when you're really into something, a lot of times the obstacles just make you more fired up. Well, this is going to be good because there's obstacles. That means it's You know, you ever done Sankirtan and like a lot of obstacles and you think it's going to be big. They're obstacles, you know. We just got to get there. Yes?
So whenever you're having such obstacles repeatedly, so and we still keep on trying, so aren't we sort of over-endeavoring? Which is
All right. If you're trying for something in which you're not really passionate about, or it really goes against your nature, then that may be true. The third possibility is you're out of alignment, so you can't achieve it until you change internally. So then you have to see which one it is. Could be all of them. Because if something's really not your nature, you're not really going to be passionate about it. Because it's just, you know, it's like you don't like to dance and you think, I should be a dancer, you know. It doesn't work, right? I was at the home of some Indians and their daughter was 4 years old and she was she would get up and dance on all the tables in the house. She was like born a dancer, right? You couldn't stop her. And my daughter loves to dance and I always knew when she was sick when she got better because she'd start dancing. That's how I knew she was better, right? So, you know, if that's not who you are and people are pushing you to be a dancer, what's the point? There's no energy there, right? It's not your nature. So that, therefore there's no passion, right? So that may be there. But if you have passion about it and you're good at it, then there's something else going on. You're either lacking the willpower, you don't have belief or the self-confidence in yourself, or your motive is wrong, you're trying to outdo somebody else, and that's not a powerful motive, unless you're a big demon. You know, you're a big demon, it's a powerful motive. But, right? But one of the most important things for all of us in our spiritual life is to connect with something that we're passionate about. There's one letter, Prabhupada said, doesn't matter what you do, do it for Krishna. Just be passionate about it, whatever it is. Because that will draw out all your energy in service to Krishna. And Prabhupada as the spiritual master is just trying to engage us energetically and enthusiastically. And you find something for which you're energetic and enthusiastic, go for it. That's really important for you. And you'll be motivated. And then, if that's the case, and still you run into an obstacle, then there's something inside that's telling you, I'm not good enough. Or I don't want to outdo this other devotee, she's my superior, so I won't do it well. Some craziness like that. Right? You know that craziness? Some people have. They don't want to outdo someone who's senior to them. So they don't perform on a high level. There's another meditation also. You don't want to perform on a high level because then people will honor you and you'll feel like, well, if people honor me, I'll become proud. Right? So we have to deal with that also. That's the fear of success. So we want to make the world Krishna conscious. And what better way to make people Krishna conscious is to have them honor you. Because when they honor you, they listen to you. Right? Isn't it? And if you have some position in society where a lot of people honor you, then you have access to teaching more people. So one Christian teacher said something that impressed me tremendously. She said, you don't serve God by playing small. Think, you know, well, I'll just be humble and I won't do much because I don't want to become puffed up and I don't want to outdo my superiors. You don't serve God by playing small. So it's a detachment. We have to be detached enough to be able to succeed on a level where perhaps we'll be honored. So that may be there also, the fear of succeeding, as much as the fear of failing. Right? Yes? You understand? Yeah. Okay. Yes?
On the concept of belief.
Belief, yes. Right.
It doesn't mean I'm going to.
No.
So there seems limits according to what you believe.
Yeah, but I'll tell you a nice story. The limits are beyond what you think. They did an experiment And they fed people a milkshake, which was a low-calorie milkshake, and then they saw the effects on their body, how much weight they gained and how it affected their digestion and so forth. Then they gave them this really rich milkshake and they saw the effects. So they got fatter when they took the rich milkshake and it had a different effect on their digestion, as you would expect, right? Guess what? They fed them the same milkshake. They just told them this one is health milkshake and this one is the rich and decadent milkshake. So when they took the rich and decadent milkshake, which was the same as the simple milkshake, they had rich and decadent effects. Isn't that amazing? Would you like to hear another amazing story? Do you believe that story? It's research done in university labs by crazy students who do in psychology classes who do experiments like that. And other crazy students who get paid to go through those experiments. But. Yes? So, next experiment. I don't know how many people were involved in this experiment, 50 or 100. 100 people needed knee surgery. They all had the same knee injury. 50 people were given the knee surgery. And the other 50 people, only an incision was made and then it was sewn up. So it looked like they had knee surgery. So they both had the same incision. But 50 people didn't have the operation, just the incision. And the incision was sewn up. And they were told they had the surgery. 1 year later, when they all came back to see the condition of their knee, both the 50 who had the operation and the 50 who didn't had healed equally. You believe that? Rukmini's like, I don't know. You making this stuff up? Okay. If you didn't believe that one, you're probably not going to believe this one. This one's even better. This man is cleaning out a walk-in refrigerator. And it's a holiday weekend, and the company is closing early. So normally they close at 5, now they're closing at 4. So while he's in the refrigerator cleaning it out, somebody comes and locks the door. And this is in the days before cell phones. So the man goes, you know, he didn't know the door was locked, and he goes to go out, and he finds he's in the walk-in refrigerator. It's Friday afternoon. He's yelling, banging, screaming. Everyone has gone. And he starts to deal with the reality that he is going to freeze to death. What's it called? Hypothermia? Is that it? He's going to freeze to death, right? So he has paper and pen on him, and he writes his last note to his family, and he explains, I got locked into this walk-in refrigerator. It's so many degrees. That means, you know, by Saturday night, I will have frozen to death, and I love you, and goodbye, right? And as expected, when they came Monday morning, he was dead of hypothermia. They did the, what do you call?
Autopsy.
Autopsy, yeah. They did the autopsy. Mine is not working tonight. They did autopsy and they found he died of hypothermia. There's only one strange